Do we have to be recording this? I mean, the last thing we want is for someone to know.
I want to stay true to my purpose here, which means recording for posterity when I think it's appropriate. But don't worry, I won't publish it before the night of the gala.
I don't know.
You trust me, don't you?
Yeah, you know that I do, but...
It'll be okay. I promise. So for the recording, I'm just gonna go through this one more time. Feel free to jump in. You, me, and Liza will attend the Total Eclipse Gala as invited guests of Jane Wiedekind.
For the record, I still think you going is a terrible idea.
Anyway, so once we get there, you guys are going to go find the contacts at the party who are volunteering to help you with your ritual. Once you've got what you need from them, you send me the text, and then we meet at the south wing of the manor before going up to the tower. From there, I will, jump off the tower.
You don't have to. It doesn't have to be you.
I keep telling you, I've made up my mind. I won't let anyone else risk it. I'll jump, and then you'll use your latent telekinetic ability to catch me before I hit the ground. Please catch me. You do your incantation, and then the ritual is complete. The grimoire is kept in a special room in the south wing.
It's called the Cradle Room, protected with enchantments.
Right. So if the incantation works, you and Liza should be able to get into the Cradle Room. And then you're going to... you know.
I will. I promise.
You and I should be on the same side, Mara. We're blood. You think Andalusafi died of natural causes? That it didn't have something to do with him poking his nose into their secrets? All because of Liza's family. Why would you want them to have the grimoire?
Because
I'm going to destroy it.
My name is Mara Safi, and you're listening to the conclusion of Untold, the story of Crimson Hill. The secret was out. All along, Ethan had been going along with the plan that he and Liza had come up with, but in the end, he was going to destroy the grimoire.
Is it true?
Yes, let her go.
Oliver had spent a second in silent commune with Ethan and then lowered the knife from Liza's throat. She flung herself away from him only to turn on Ethan with a dangerous look.
What do you mean you're going to destroy it? This book is the lasting legacy of my family.
Who you hate?
Shut the hell up, Oliver. I haven't forgotten about the knife that was just at my throat a few seconds ago.
But he's right, Liza. The Wiedekind legacy has a body count. Your family doesn't have to be who you are and who you're going to be. You can choose a different path.
What? You've been talking to him, haven't you?
Does it matter? Think about it. Your aunt was going to kill all those girls. You figured out a way around that. You have more power to change your family's legacy than you know.
Suddenly, it got quiet. Liza's face changed into an expression that I couldn't read, but the look on Ethan's face I recognized. Guilt. The distress of doing something wrong. And then I realized there was something that I didn't know.
Oh my God.
Mara. The girls that Jane took.
What is it?
We found them on our way up. We were too late. Only one was still alive. The one that Jane was planning to toss off the tower.
Six? Did Ellie?
Ethan shook his head and tears sprung to my eyes. I had promised Peter Shelley that I would find her.
They're all... Fuck, we let them all die?
It's not our fault. Their fates were sealed the moment that Jane took them.
You don't care. You don't even care that we let six people die. This isn't about stopping your family from hurting other people. You can't even fathom destroying the grimoire because you need it to beat Jane Wiedekind.
I'm sorry, Mara, but it will be safer in my hands. I can't allow it to be destroyed.
Okay, then no deal. If you don't agree to destroy that thing, then I will not be jumping off the tower.
What? Then Jane will finish her ritual tonight after the party and claim the grimoire. Do you really want her to have it?
Alistair was right. You will do whatever it takes to beat Jane. You're no better than her. So those are my terms. Either you agree to destroy the book, or Jane wins.
Mara.
I already told you. I've made up my mind.
You heard her, Saint Montaigne. Try not to fuck up the landing.
And for a second, things started to make sense. The four of us climbed up the spiral staircase that led us to the top of the tower. The further we went up, the colder the air seemed to get. But there was a moment that I dismissed at the time because, well, I don't know why, but for just a moment, I saw Ethan falter, almost as if he was going to say something to me. And I was cold and anxious for what awaited me at the top of the spire, so I let it go. When we finally reached the top, I was shivering, either from cold or fear, I wasn't sure. I walked to the ledge with Ethan and Liza, and the three of us joined hands. Oliver hung back by the door to the stairs, watching. Ethan and Liza began chanting in German, the incantation from the grimoire. I waited on Ethan's nod. That was going to be my signal to jump. But when they finished the incantation, the nod never came. Instead, his voice in my head said, "It's not going to work. You're almost at the end, but before we can get there, we have to take a short ad break. Thank you for listening to Untold with Mara Safi. We'll be right back." It's not going to work. There is a moment between understanding something and realizing what it means. Usually it doesn't take that long, but up on that tower, it felt like hours. Days. What he was saying was sinking in. Not only did I have to jump, but I had to land 130 feet below, and I wasn't going to survive because I wasn't meant to. However, it did not take Liza that long to realize what was going on. She looked at Ethan, and then at me, and then the realization dawned on her. She knew that I had to die in order for this to work. I don't have a recording of what happened next, and even if I did, it wouldn't feel right to play it. So I'm just going to tell you what happened. That agonizing moment of deliberation ended, and I took in a shaky breath and tried to convince myself that I was ready to die for a cause. When suddenly Ethan's eyes widened and he grabbed my arm and yanked me backward. I tried to pull back in protest, but both of us were distracted by Eliza still standing on the ledge. She turned to face us with her back against the ink-black sky. She said, "So this is what I'm choosing," and then I saw her fall backward. Time stood still and I felt the dread flood my body, followed by a shot of adrenaline. I ran to the ledge of the tower and looked down. There she was, in front of the marble statue of Stags, lying on the stone path. Liza Wiedekind was dead. What happened next was an impossible blur. I turned to Ethan, who looked at me tearfully. He said that we had no time to waste. So as I heard people pull out of the house to find Liza Wiedekind's body practically falling on her family's doorstep, Ethan, Oliver, and I ran back down the stairs and toward the cradle room. I don't remember much, just that Ethan opened the door to a dimly lit room and slowly placed one foot over the threshold, then another. The ritual had been a success. He closed the door behind him and after a few seconds emerged, holding it. The green leather-strapped book, the Wiedekind Grimoire. And then with Oliver and me as witness, Ethan flipped to the very last page and read out some words in German. As soon as he finished, he dropped it from his hands, and it burst into flames. "Let's get out of here," Ethan said. I pointed out the potential of the fire from the grimoire spreading through the manor. "Let it burn," Oliver said. While we hurried down the hallway, I stopped him and asked, "What about his father? What about Abel?" He told me quite plainly that Jane didn't have him. She never had him. He figured out a few days ago, after a private investigator he hired found credit card transactions in Abel Sweets' name purchasing plane tickets to France and then a reservation at the Lawrence Hotel. He had evidently gone searching for his roots. When we made it out the front door, I looked back and saw distant flames rising from the south wing. Enchanted fire would soon engulf the manor, destroying the home that had housed generations of darkness. This was Liza Wiedekind's legacy. The day that I left Crimson Hill, it was raining. A more sentimental part of me thought that this was the town's way of saying goodbye, washing away the sins of what happened in the past few weeks. Sitting on the bus that was driving toward the airport, I turned around and looked at the town one last time. I said a silent farewell to the cobblestone streets and the cozy shops and restaurants that stood stacked next to each other. And finally, my eyes fell on the hill, getting smaller and smaller in the distance. The hill that went all the way up to what was left of Founders Lane. I was packing up my belongings in my room at the Blanchard's Bed and Breakfast when there was a knock at the door. It was Ethan Sanmontaine. I hadn't seen him since Liza's funeral. I let him in and we began to discuss that night. It was the first time that I had talked about it out loud. That's why I haven't been updating this show. Until now, I couldn't. We started with easier topics of conversation. Ethan had probed his uncle's mind, something he rarely ever did, and found out that Jane had told him that she used Abel to lure me to the house, so that she could use me as her final sacrifice, a twisted and poetic end to her mother's betrayal. I felt less guilty about helping burn down her ancestral home. Then I asked if he knew Liza was going to do that. He told me that he'd read her mind right before he yanked me off the ledge. But I think he's lying. I think their closeness made him privy to Liza's intentions far before she ever climbed that ledge. He had expected her to do the right thing, even if it meant watching her die. I have to admit that I felt foolish. It was naive not to understand that all magic requires sacrifice, that we couldn't bamboozle it somehow. That's why the grimoire had to be destroyed in the first place, because the sacrifice was rarely ever worth it. I had this blind faith in the solution that he had presented, where no one had to die. I actually thought that he could swoop in and save the day. When he finally left the room, I felt a sense of sadness. I realized that he had become my closest friend while I lived in this town, but I never really knew him to begin with. Then again, I was never meant to put down roots in this town. I was chasing someone else's story. And I wasn't the only one. A few days before I left, I stopped by the town radio station to say goodbye to Oliver. I found his office had been emptied, and after much coaxing, his old secretary told me that he'd emailed his station manager a letter of resignation and then left without a word. Maybe he'd finally taken that European trip. I want to hope that he's begun to heal from his severance from the Sweets family. I have this fantasy that he'll find his father and they'll reconnect over their newfound roots. And if you should come looking, Oliver, searching for the legacy of Andalus Safi, I'll be waiting. But until then, I think we can close the last chapter of the Untitled Founders Family Project, or as I have come to call it, the Untold Story of Crimson Hill. Untold with Mara Safi is written and edited by Maisha Razik. This episode featured guest voices Ethan Christopher, Colton Coates, and Reza Bari. Music by Ross Bugden. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, rate, and share this podcast with your friends, and be sure to follow us at The Untold Pod on Twitter and Instagram.